Good morning, diners or travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're going to be talking to you about what else? Drinks.
Yeah,
but before that,
we should have said drinkers and travelers, shouldn't
we? Yes, we should have. Imbibers. But not all of it's alcoholic, the drinks. So, but anyhow, before we talk about all those things, we're going to be introducing our listeners to an event that they may want to catch up with.
Timely news.
Because
this is an event that's happening in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, September 15th and through the 17th.
Yeah, and listen to LaVon Wallace, who's tightly involved with this event. He's an executive chef, and he's going to be putting together this wonderful gospel brunch. But let's listen to what he has to say about Music City, food, and wine. Well, it's that exciting time of the year again. We're getting ready for Music City Food and Wine. And to tell us something about it, this is the fifth one, fifth annual, we have LaVon Wallace of Gray and Dudley, which is a new operation in Nashville, right, LaVon?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Downtown Nashville.
Okay, now you are a chef.
I am the executive chef of Gray and Dudley, located at the 21C Museum Hotel here in downtown Nashville.
Now, I don't know if I've ever been to that hotel or to that
museum. It's new, I think.
Museum.
Isn't the hotel fairly new?
Yes, so we have been open now about three or four months. So we opened in the spring and had a tremendous tremendous turnout.
And you've got a very special place in Nashville's Music City Food and Wine Festival, because they changed the whole program around to accommodate a culinary superstar, I think, maybe something like that.
Maybe something like that. I think what we're doing this year, aside from what's changed from other years, is this gospel brunch on Sunday, which I think there was a little bit of a preview, I think, last year on the final day of the festival. There was some gospel music, and that really turned out to be a great success. And so I think it's a really, really neat idea and very keen, especially, after a long weekend, to end on an uplifting and positive note with some really great chefs, some great food, and some gospel music.
So who's going to be with you? You're in charge, but who's going to be with you at the gospel brunch?
As far as some of the chefs in town. Well, you may have heard of this guy. His name's Tim Love. I'm not sure.
We interviewed Tim a couple years ago, I think. Maybe last year.
Not too many people have heard of him, but yeah,
he's not hardly.
Not hardly.
He's a great guy. Yeah. Yeah. But we've got some really great talent coming that day. One of my dear friends, Mr. Carl Worley from Biscuit Love here in town.
Let's back up because there are two things that are absolutely essential here is give our listeners the dates of this and also the website where they can check it out.
Correct.
Dates.
So the Music City Food and Wine Festival runs from September 15th through the 17th. And Friday and Saturday will be at the Bicentennial Capitol Mall. Saturday night and Sunday gospel brunch will be held at the Walk of Fame Park.
Right.
And people can purchase tickets at www.musiccityfoodandwinefestival.com/tickets. And there is a variety of packages and tiers that you can purchase. There's an all-in, all-inclusive. It comes with lots of bells and whistles, all the way to just tickets specifically for gospel brunch or for Saturday or Friday.
Well, since we started going to this, I think we've come to learn a lot more about the scene, certainly a lot more about the scene, and the Kings of Leon. Tell us about the Kings of Leon.
Hometown heroes, those guys are really great, Grammy Award winning artists and founders, along with, Jonathan Waxman and Ken Leviathan and the C3 group. It all started as a hangout with the Kings of Leon, and here we are 5 years later. It's pretty great.
Yeah, there's so many highlights, it's hard to sort through them all. You mentioned some of them. And Jonathan Waxman is really a big promoter of this, isn't he?
He really is. Yes, ma'am.
And he has a restaurant named after his grandmother or his mother, Adelaide?
Adele.
Adele's, and it's after his mother. Very popular restaurant in town, yeah.
They have a really great kale salad, actually. I don't even like kale salad, and I like that one. some of the other people, how about Pappy Hour? That's funny. It's Pappy Van Winkle, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, synonymous with these festivals, it's called the Food and Wine Festival, but I think because of where we are in the country, and I think as a whole, bourbon and whiskey is very, very in high demand. So I think the addition of Pappy Hour this year after Pappy Van Winkle, which is the kind of highly sought after, highly allocated.
Yeah, hard to get.
Yeah, very hard to get.
And pricey.
So I think it's a great opportunity for people to come and taste. And get a taste of that stuff,
and
that Pappy Van Winkle juice. Have you had it, Ann? Have you had
I loved it. I mean, we had it instead of anything else. I mean, I drank it. I'm not a booze person, but I drank it instead of wine because it was so much better all the way through the press, our dinner at Husk. When we were there once.
This is when Husk first opened.
And they used to buy it by the barrel.
Yeah, and Julian was standing there right at the bar, just supping Pappy like everybody else was.
Yeah.
And a more laid-back person than it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, one of the highlights of this whole event is that I think because of the location, all the big stars, the celebrity chefs, the music people are all kind of mellower, or more mellow, I guess, and it's friendlier. It's one of the most friendly events, and we go to a lot of food and wine festivals that we've ever been to. Is that Southern hospitality?
I think so. I think, I think I can't speak to, which food festivals you two have been to, and I'm sure you've been to a lot, but I think that in general, chefs going to these events, it's a really great opportunity for us to, kind of get down and spend time with each other, which we never get to do much. We're always busy in our restaurants. But it's a nice time to, make face-to-face connections and socialize a bit. But I also think that's why Music City is a ideal location for a food festival of this nature and this caliber. I think that you're absolutely right that Southern hospitality is automatic here. It's second nature. It's unforced, and so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of our friends there: Hugh Asherson, John Besh, who we adore, Sean Brock, Susan Feininger, who we actually have never interviewed, I don't think, Marcus Samuelson, our beloved Elon Shia from New Orleans.
Oh, is he going to be there?
Yeah, and from Nashville, Tandy Wilson, who we love. His food is so great. And we always like especially the Pat Martin's barbecue joint. I mean, that whole operation is unmatched by any of the other events at these food and wine festivals. Well, I'm excited. You can tell.
I get that. We are too. I think the whole town is excited.
Okay. Well, Levon, repeat that the website once again, because all these events that we just sort of hinted at or mentioned can be spelled out or will be spelled out on that website, and it is, again...
Sure. So, again, that runs from the 15th to the 17th of September, and you can find tickets at www.musiccityfoodandwinefestival.com/tickets.
Great.
And if you want the schedule, you just follow the links to home, and you'll get
all
the schedule as well.
There. Yep.
I'm looking forward to meeting you and maybe even stopping by your restaurant when we're there.
Oh, I look forward to it. Yeah, I hope so.
All right, and great. Thank you for stepping in and introducing people to the event.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure and an honor, and thanks so much for the opportunity, and I hope to see you soon.
So last thing to say quickly about Music City Food and Wine Festival is we're going to be there, so look out for us and be sure to say hi. And we'll have a drink together, and we'll have something to eat together as well, no doubt. And we'll be back on the more regular agenda right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and now on to our drinks episodes, starting with non-alcoholic drinks, starting with a really dear friend, Cheryl Klaus, who we interviewed shortly after her company launched, and we've been following their progress, and it has been a huge success. Cheryl was founder and has operated the company making dry soda. This is an old acquaintance, shall I say, but now we call each other friends. Cheryl Klaus, we interviewed you about your product and company, Dry Soda, a million years ago when you were just starting out, and we have followed your progress from those really almost accidental beginnings. If I recall, you were pregnant and couldn't find anything to drink. Is that the deal?
Right, yes. I wanted to be able to find something I could pair with food that would be, not quite like wine, but at least some sort of an elevated experience, make it feel special.
So, and you started with how many flavors?
I started with four. We had lavender, lemongrass, kumquat, and rhubarb. Real different flavors.
They're wonderful flavors, aren't they?
I've forgotten, so just so our listeners can get in on it, why dry? I mean, the one thing you may be sure about soda is it's certainly the opposite of dry. It's distinctly wet.
So. You know, I thought I was so brilliant when I came up with that name, but it does cause lots of questions. And really the concept there was that the bottom line is just because it's less sweet. We were using, to really get the best out of those flavors, it was important to just use what we call sugar with a purpose. So you don't want to overload it. You wanted to just get just the right amount of sugar to really enhance the flavor. And so it ends up only being about a quarter to a third of the sugar of a regular soda. And so we really just thought dry was using like in the wine vernacular, meaning less sweet. That was the most kind of important attribute of the product. So that's why it is called dry.
So it's the nomenclature that's sort of a little bit like wine.
Absolutely, and that was the obviously concept too. Because the original idea was to really help have something that you could pair with food. Obviously, now we've grown to just a drink that you just get to consume completely on its own and have a great refreshing beverage. But at the time,
and
I was looking to pair it with food.
So, how many flavors do you have now?
We are, that's a good question. I think we are at 9 flavors now because what we've been doing is we've been starting to do seasonal flavors in the last year and a half. And so that's been really fun. We've brought some flavors in and out of the market. So I think, but we have 9 flavors that are on the shelf every day.
So, and we get press releases, of course, when you come up with a new one. And the latest one was watermelon.
Yeah, so we did, and we brought that one in last summer. Last summer we did the watermelon, and we did a serrano pepper, and put those out for the summertime, and they were extremely popular, especially watermelon. It just, we threw it in 4 weeks, and we had planned to have it, you know, out in the market for the whole summer, but it went so quickly. And so we brought it back this summer and decided to, with just so many requests that we had for it, we decided to bring it into our permanent line. So it is now available nationwide, yeah.
And you're very tuned into, I don't want to say trend as in trendy, but in-demand mm-hmm. kinds of considerations, such as the importance of ginger now.
Right.
I mean, that's yeah. important.
Well, ginger's coming from everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, ginger ale is coming at us from the left and from the right and from the bottom and from the top, not just from dry soda, but from other people whose names, of course, I won't mention.
One reason why I didn't really want to do a ginger at first, because I felt like, well, there's so many gingers out there. But what was interesting and where my frustration was is I couldn't get a ginger that wasn't so sweet, and I really wanted one that didn't have all that sugar, and there just wasn't. So I was like, all right, guys, let's make this ginger. And so we have our ginger, which is, it's still spicy, but it's much less sweet. It's really a sophisticated ginger. I love it. I was the one that was more nervous about doing it, and it's just now it's one of my favorite flavors. So I'm really pleased with it. And it's only got a third of the sugar of any of the other gingers out there.
Now, we got some, I think the guys who designed it, I think his first name is Bruce.
Oh, Cost.
Bruce Cost,
yeah.
And he does a particularly fine line of ginger ales.
Yeah, his gingers are very good, yeah.
But they're very powerful. They're very gingery.
Yes, they are real strong for sure, yeah.
And I think that's really not where you're going.
Yeah, we're not quite that gingery, but we definitely have some spice in there, so you're getting a little bit of that bite. But again, I think we feel really good about it because we feel like you can really taste the ginger without it being overpowering because you're not putting so much sugar in there. So mm-hmm. it's how do you kind of use sugar like you would salt? You know, you just gotta use it to bring out the best of the flavors.
Ginger is absolutely necessary for me because I am always like 2 millimeters away from getting food poisoning where I lay.
And brilliant.
And the saving grace of after something like that is if you could get the just fresh ginger minced and steeped with boiling water. And you
yes.
a few cups of that, and you're ready to go eat again.
And it was really funny. We were in a Michelin 2-star restaurant.
Oh yeah,
in the north of England, and Anne had one of those issues, and she thought, well, maybe ginger would be fine. So we asked them to check with the kitchen, and the kitchen of a Michelin 2-star restaurant didn't have any ginger.
Oh wow!
Yeah, well, he doesn't use it.
We're not going to say where it was.
He doesn't use it.
Seems to me like everyone would have some, but they didn't.
So next, you're going to have to do turmeric, right?
Yeah, that seems to be quite the one these days. Yeah, when I was just at Fancy Food, there was so much turmeric out there. So
we have it like just the fresh root all the time in the fridge, and Peter makes. What do you call it?
Two martini.
Oh, wow, really? Look at you ahead of the flavor trends there. That's amazing.
Well, what else would you call it? Martini made with turmeric. I mean, perfectly obvious what you should call it. That's why you call wet soda dry soda. Now, here's a question for you. You started out inventing this style of beverage. Feel like an adult pop because you were expecting and you didn't want to imbibe alcoholic beverages, but you wanted something that tasted a whole lot better. Now, there's another side to the market, I think, but I'm interested in your observation about it. My relatives in England are really obsessed with not drinking when they drive. Apparently the police forces over in the UK are
Australia too.
Are particularly tough on driving under the influence. I mean, when I was growing up, they certainly weren't, but now they are. So,
right.
So you if you go out for a party evening out, you have to have a designated driver. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yep.
And is this a driver for you or not?
Actually, that's interesting. It has been. We make amazing gifts for, like, you know, when you're housewarming gifts, or like when you're going over to a party, you're bringing a gift. But interestingly, so that you have something for those that aren't imbibing at the time. But the other thing too that's been really funny is we are in so many different wineries, because they will use that. They can do flights of those for people and do tastings of dry for their designated drivers. And so that's been a really big hit. And, and it was really about, you know, when feeling like you're not being left out of the situation when you can't drink. So if you can't drink because you're driving, or you can't drink because you're pregnant, or you just don't drink, there's lots of people that just don't drink alcohol. It's about still being able to feel special and having something that, you know, it's not just a Coke, it's like something more sophisticated and elevated.
Yeah.
And so that was, that's absolutely, and when we, you know, in restaurants, it's still served in champagne flutes. So you can still feel like it's, you know, a special experience, and that's you're still part of the group.
Yeah, well, you've done a great job with your packaging. It looks sophisticated. It looks like what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're proud of that packaging.
I'm actually kind of surprised you haven't been sued by Nike.
Why is that?
Well, the emblem on the top of the cork looks an awful lot like
the drop. You think the drop looks like the swoosh?
Looks a little bit like a swoosh.
Oh, that's funny. Well, it's a drop. It's a drop of dry.
Oh, so that's what it is. Okay.
Yes, it's a drop of dry. I promise. It's not a swoosh.
I didn't know what the symbolism was.
Also the back of the can. If you see the can, there's a drop. Yeah, we use the drop quite a bit in our packaging. So
Now the guy who designed the swoosh for Phil Knight at Nike.
Yeah, got $36.
Got $25.
Oh, I thought it was $36.
I know, isn't that funny?
We hope you paid your logo person a little bit more than that.
Not much.
Well, Cheryl, you've already talked about expanding outside the United States. We've talked about various markets expanding even within the United States. What does your business plan say? What are you going to do next?
Well, so really the goal now is to really be able to get dry into as many people's hands as possible and make it more convenient for everybody. So really what we're looking at is channels of business. So you know, we're in grocery stores, we're in natural and specialty stores, and now we're going into drug stores. So like CVS, because lots of people are using drug stores now as quick sort of convenience stores, if you will, and they'll go in. And so now dry is available at 6,000 CVS stores throughout the country. And then another area is mass retailers such as Target. So dry is available nationwide in Target. So, you know, all of these different places where you're going to go to pick up beverages, dry wants to be there. And we're starting to go into convenience stores now. So it's about really being able to be where the consumers are and when they're using dry in different occasions, and being able to just to be wherever it is they are. And then obviously it's just also just, we still need to be building brand awareness, right? That's a big part of building a beverage company is, you know, just getting more and more people to know about your product, and then obviously getting more and more people to drink more of your product. So, which is where some of the different packaging comes in, like the cans. So we have cans, you know, now, and bottles. The cans obviously can be a bit more convenient at times for people.
Yes, it's amazing how the beverage industry has exploded. It's just absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, right? So many different kinds of beverages out there now. It's not just soda and water and milk anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you have your hands full. I don't know if you ever envisioned being this busy, but you are, I imagine.
Yeah, it's, you know, I had very big vision for the company from the start. It was, we wanted to create a new category of soda, and we really feel like we've done that. And there's lots of competitors out there now that are doing some really more premium and more upscale products, and we're seeing more people. Really, the consumers are demanding, you know, better ingredients. And that's been a staple of dry from the beginning. I mean, since I created in my kitchen, you know, I only used four ingredients. I didn't have access to all those different ingredients. So to have that clean ingredient panel, and then to be using sugar, you know, for a purpose as opposed to just you know, throw a bunch of sugar in there and make it really sweet, I think people are really appreciating too. So you get that good, you can feel really good about drinking dry.
Right. Well, I think you've really, I don't know what to call it, you've invented a beverage industry, I think, in a way.
Well, that's pretty what big we hope stuff. We've done. I mean, that's what we've been working so hard to do, and it's been really amazing to see the different retailers get so behind it, because it's what the consumers want, so they're giving more shelf space. So to see CVS really get behind this concept and put us into 6,000 stores is really cool, and they understand that, you know, premium and more elevated craft experience and sparkling is growing, and people are wanting that.
Well, come back and see us again.
I will absolutely do that, for sure.
and in the meantime, have a great time in Cuba, where you're off traveling very soon. I hope you're going to pack a sufficient supply of dry soda to take with you.
Yes, we are actually taking some with us, for sure.
That's a good gift.
Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Cheryl. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And staying with the same non-alcoholic beverages, Up Mountain Switchel?
Up Mountain Switchel, which is one of Peter's favorite brands, and we'll be talking to Ely Key about what it is, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, right. We were wondering, except we had actually had some once before, but we got more, and Ely's a really interesting guy, so here's his story.
I think, Ely Key, with the poetic name, that your Up Mountain Switchel goes back quite a long way. Switchel itself. What is Switchel?
So Switchel, by definition, is ginger, apple cider vinegar, maple syrup, and water.
Really?
And what it was it was originally created by Vermont farmers, and it was used as a haytime drink, and it was used kind of like the original farmer's Gatorade. They would drink it when they were working in the fields to give them energy for hydration, help with allergies, and they would drink it in conjunction with water, and it was really what would keep them going, haying in the field by hand. You know, this is before tractors, so they're haying very close to the wildflower and hay debris and dirt, and it would help clear their throats of that and keep them hydrated and energized.
Now, this was not an invention in Vermont itself, though. You said earlier that it's sort of the style of beverage has been known to farming communities across the world for a long time.
Yes, Switchel itself is Vermont, and Switchel, again, using the maple syrup, that is a Vermont recipe that did originate in Vermont. But the use of apple cider vinegar, ginger, and some sort of sweetener probably goes back to even ancient Chinese civilizations and further.
Okay, so the availability of a natural sweetener like maple syrup distinguishes it from other beverages of the same type.
Yes, and it defines it as Switchel. So maple syrup is a low glycemic index sweetener, and it has a bunch of minerals and of course the beloved taste. So that does add to the value and the benefits that Switchel provides.
Now let's sort something out here, because in some of your background information you talk about Switchel. In other places you have something called Swizzle.
Yeah, which is a term
which is Switchel, but your brand name version of it. Exactly, what's the relationship between those two things?
Absolutely, thanks for asking. We're Up Mountain is our brand, and we make Up Mountain Switchel, and we're the first to market, humbly responsible for kind of reviving the Switchel category. We also make Up Mountain Swizzel, which is a carbonated version of our Switchel. So the recipe is the same, we've just added carbonation. And Swizzel is actually also a heritage name. They used to call it, it was interchangeable with Switchel and Swizzel back in the 1700s, and we just thought it was really great and appropriate for adding bubbles.
Yeah, and I have to say, this stuff is really delicious.
Yeah, Peter, it's been drinking.
It went pretty quick.
Wow, thank you so much. I mean, it means a lot coming from you guys, so
well,
glad to hear it.
I had most of the ingredients from elsewhere, so I was able to make my own, not nearly as good as yours, but it was okay.
It did take about a year to finalize our recipe, and there's many minds and palates that went into that. We got feedback from our local Vermont community, the farmers market, some of which were even generational farmers in their 90s who had consumed switchola's kids. So don't feel bad. There's many minds and palates that went into creating our switchola.
I think if there's a secret, it's probably the maple syrup you use as a sweetener. I suspect that that's it. And the other thing is you have to be brave. As you put apple cider vinegar into something, you have to be fairly brave to say, this is going to taste good. It's not going to taste as awful as it sounds like it might.
Absolutely right. Yeah, they're all apple cider vinegar, ginger, and maple syrup are all very strong flavors. So striking the balance between the three, and water, of course, as the fourth ingredient, is not an easy task. It does take some fiddling around.
So you said you've been making this for about 7 years?
About 7 years, yeah. Up Mountain Switchel is 5 years old, and I did about 2 years of research and playing around for starting the company.
What did you do before, and what led you to this?
My background is in agriculture, renewable energy, and creative art.
Creative arts.
Yep. Yeah, photography and writing. And my love and my background, even as in my childhood, has been agrarian. And my first job out of college was for a lemon and avocado grower in Southern California.
Oh, yeah.
And we've always maintained our family farm in Vermont. And my dad is actually the first person to ever tell me about switchel. And we were hanging our fields up in Vermont when he told me about it. I just loved the history and the stories that I read and everything about the drink. So that's what really led me into making it. My co-founder and I, just really loved all the aspects of it.
Now, so you can get the swizzle, which is the carbonated version. You can get the switchel, which is the natural version. Is there such a thing as other flavors with switchel, or is it?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
We make, we have Up Mountain Original Switchel. We have Up Mountain Lemon Switchel. We have Up Mountain Cayenne Switchel and Up Mountain Yerba Mate Switchel.
Yerba Mate, yeah. I guess you're going in the fields if you're wearing out.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It combines what the North American farmers drink, which is switchel, with what the campesinos and gauchos and the South American farmers drink. So that's really blending those two kind of historical cultures together, and it happens to be delicious.
Yeah. It's sort of an acquired taste, I would say, yerba mate, don't you think?
It can be, yeah. It's a little, on its own, it can be a little bitter.
Uh-huh.
But with the added ginger and the touch of maple syrup, it's really pleasant. And it's just a really nice natural, has vitamin D and has a little bit of caffeine, so it's a really nice natural stimulant.
It's too bad you drank all the switchel up. I think maybe my fruit flies would like that better than balsamic.
Well, why should I give good switchel to lousy fruit flies?
I'm battling fruit flies from my farmer's market. And there were clouds at the mall in my house. So I took the old style thing of putting apple cider vinegar in a bowl, covering it with a saran wrap thing, and poking little holes in it so that the fruit flies would be attracted to it and go in and not be able to get out. Except they don't seem to do that. They go and they sit on the edge and kind of sniff it.
It's amazing how many uses for apple cider vinegar there are.
Oh, I drink it. I love it.
And that's one of the fruit flies. It's always a sign of a healthy kitchen, though.
It is. In that case, we certainly have a healthy kitchen.
We certainly do. So tell me what your market is for this.
We have it's a wide range, and people drink it for lots of different reasons. But we have, as I mentioned before, the generational farmers. The farmers markets love Switzerland, and it goes back to their, you know, their childhood. So they drink it out of culture and tradition, and also for the health benefits. And then, of course, we our biggest market currently is New York City. And we have a lot of, you know, the millennials that drink it, and ginger has a lot of benefits, as does apple cider vinegar and maple. So they're drinking it for anything from grab and go drink with lunch to for hydration after a yoga class. If you're biking and commuting throughout the city, it's really great for your joints and just your general health. So there's that demographic as well. We do a lot of business with bars and restaurants. So it's big in the culinary scene and for its taste. So not only does it have the health benefits, but we've got a lot of good positive feedback on the taste. And so people are using it to mix with mocktails or serve with fine dining. And the other market, I mean, even kids love it. We were really surprised at the farmer's market. We would give it out to kids when we first started. We didn't think that it was going to be something that kids would really like, and we're just amazed that even children really love it. So it's a wide range. I mean, here in New York City, there's also the West Indian community that has been drinking ginger and ginger beers for, you know, as part of their culture and tradition forever.
Who is that?
West Indies.
West Indies. Yeah,
because that's
where ginger's native there, I guess. I mean, for a short time growing up, My sister and I actually had a ginger beer yeast plant, and you could use it to make ginger beer, but we were not very good at it, so the culture died. Listen, there's really one important thing we have left, and that is to let our listeners know, how do they get some of this wonderful Oak Mountain stuff, so that they can realize how much they would enjoy it too?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. It's an important one. So we have, we sell Up Mountain Switchel on our website, which is drinkswitchel.com. There's also a store locator on our website, so you can see where you can purchase it. We're sold all around the U.S. We are currently sold in Whole Foods Northeast. So if any of the listeners are close to a Whole Foods in the Northeast, they can go find us there. And we're also in some of the smaller chains and delis and specialty stores and coffee shops. But if going into the brick-and-mortar places fails, then there's always our website, which, again, is drinkswitchel.com.
Well, it seems like you've got yourself a good business going here.
Yeah, congratulations. Really? And congratulations for preserving a piece of history and making a great business at the same time.
Oh, well, thank you guys for the kind words. We're grateful to have learned about it and grateful for the community that has supported us in getting here and folks like yourselves who are just helping us spread the word. So we are a grassroots company, and we just think Switchel deserves to be out there.
Well, it is.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
So here we are again, moving on to the hard stuff. First up, Yvonne Niami, which rhymes with Miami, although Yvonne's from California. She grew up with tequila, but she really saw a future very different from the stuff that she drank growing up or that her family drank. And so she has a company that is splendid called Viva 32 Tequila. Well, I'm going to actually cede to you,
who's the
tequila, but I just wanted to introduce Yvonne Niami, who is actually of Mexican origin, which makes this tequila line, Viva Tequila, even more authentic, I think, and legitimate. But we liked it very much. But I'm going to let you do the introduction because you drank the whole first bottle by your lonesome.
Well, I didn't do it. I didn't do it all in one sitting. Well, took me several weeks. But when something arrives and it says on this little card with the same kind of what do you pattern on it as is on the bottle, and then it says this is some kind of badass tequila. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I think it's supposed to be a recommendation.
So
I just asked Yvonne before we came on the air. I said, "Now, what possessed you to want to launch yet another badass brand of tequila into the marketplace?" So tell everybody what you just told me.
Sure. So when I started Viva 32 Tequila, I launched it because I grew up around tequilas, being Mexican, and my mom would bring out the tequila bottles, just like you'd see like in an Italian family where they bring out all the red wine, and we would taste it, and I never liked it. And the reason why is because most tequilas are either a mixto or they just flat out just don't taste good. And so what I did was I said, as I grew up and I was able to afford sipping tequilas, which is a whole other world of tequila, I started to really enjoy tequila. But I realized that all those tequilas were $100 to $300 a bottle. And I didn't think that was fair. I went down to the distillery in Mexico. My Spanish came in handy, and I was able to speak to the distillery and negotiate a really fantastic sipping tequila and for a lower price point. So our bottle sells for, our tequila Hoven sells for $39 retail, which is unheard of for a varietal like the Hoven varietal to be sold at. And then our Reposado, we also brought Reposado to market, which is a 6 month aged tequila, and that one it retails at $42.99. So, you know, we're really, our price point's low. And the juice inside is so fantastic and tastes so great. I that's why I had to bring this tequila to market. I want more people to know and understand that there's a whole other world of tequila, and it's very delicious.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And it's actually.
I began thinking when I started sipping, I wanted, why haven't I not been drinking this all this time?
You know, right, true.
Is the full name Viva 32?
Right, so it's Viva, and means to live in Spanish.
Yeah.
And then the 32 stands for freezing point. So,
32 degrees Fahrenheit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so we love to drink it. I love to drink our tequila over ice.
There you go. I keep ours in the refrigerator.
Yes.
Where it's 38, so it's Viva 38.
Yeah.
And said, why are you doing that? I said, because it tastes better that way.
It's true. It actually, the coldness brings out the agave notes, the flavors, the nose on the agave. It really just brightens up the whole complexity of how beautiful tequila is and how complex it is.
Your product is so much more sophisticated than, I mean, I once gave a margarita party, and everybody came in and they tasted really good, these margaritas. Everybody had left the party by 9 o'clock. they were sunk.
And the hostess was fast asleep.
Exactly.
I'll tell you a funnier story, because I did some work for General Motors to Mexico at the beginning of the last decade, I guess. I can't believe it's been so long ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Getting to the United States in time for the weekend was rich, but you could get a flight on American Airlines that left around like 7:30 in the morning. Which involved getting out of bed in the center of Mexico City quite early.
Oh yeah.
but the reward was when you got to the airport, as long as there was enough time before boarding
the
plane.
The
American Airlines Club used to open, and the guy behind the bar made his own of that mixture you put in there, not sangrita.
So he made his own
sangrita, and a couple of sangrita and tequila shots early in the morning sure helped make the day go fast.
That's great.
But now Yvonne says in her publicity that They wanted this tequila to be mainly sipping, not to be mixed with anything else. And you know, all the hoopla around it, this is supposed to be so good on its own that that's how it should be drunk. Right, mm-hmm. Yvonne?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if I had it my way, I'd have everyone drinking Viva 32 on ice. But I must say, that's how I drink it.
Mm-hmm.
But we have in quite a few restaurants that have amazing mixologists and have put Viva 32 in cocktails that are delicious.
Well,
it tastes great in a cocktail.
Yeah, I was going to say you can't knock these cocktail crafts people now. I mean, they're the mixologists.
No.
Are there a couple that you think go particularly well with Viva 32?
Cocktail wise?
Yes, cocktail wise.
There's a funny cocktail that one of our restaurants that we're in makes. It's called Detox Retox, and it has cucumber juice.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know. I know I love it too, and I can't remember the entire recipe, but it's a cucumber juice. It's a little bit of club soda. It's our Viva 32. They use our Hoven or they use a Reposado. It just depends on what you want. They both taste great. And lime juice. And it's just very fresh and delicious, and that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I bet you have the same taste. I hate sweet cocktails. I hate them.
Me too. Exactly. Yeah, so I don't like sweet.
That's my big drawback when I go to a cocktail.
Well, now, it's interesting. Are you familiar with a brand of adult soda called dry soda?
No, I'm not. What's that about?
You should find out about it. It's really funny. The Shirelle, who invented this beverage, invented it because she wanted something reasonably adult and interesting to drink when she was expecting. And she gave up alcohol for that period. So she invented this soda, which is dry in the same way as red and white wines that don't have a lot of sweetness in them are called dry.
They
actually do have. There is some sugar in there, but they make interesting flavors like lavender and cucumber.
And they have cucumber and lime.
And watermelon.
Oh,
and,
I gotta try it.
She said that a lot of bars serve the dry soda in champagne flutes.
Yes.
I think it would be a great combination. And if you can't find dry soda in Miami, if you can't find a contact down there, Just let us know. We'll put you in touch with the founder of the company.
Great.
You know, she's not in Miami. That her name rhymes with Miami.
Oh, she's not in Miami?
No, she's in California.
No. Oh, she's in California. Oh.
I'm a Angelino. But my last name is Niami, and it's just like Miami but with an N.
Okay. Well, there you go. I messed up.
Now, where in Mexico did your family come from?
Monterrey, Mexico.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Beautiful there, and of course our the distillery is in the city of Tequila in Guadalajara.
Of course, why not?
So it's really
Guadalajara has some great food too.
Well, we can still put her in touch with Shirelle, even if she's in Los Angeles.
I know.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
You know, just off the subject altogether, Yvonne, but are you not amazed at how universally, I would say, adored tacos have become? I mean, truly,
tacos and tequila.
Yeah, I mean, we have all kinds of tacos, actually, even a global taco restaurant where they do taco, T-A-K-O, with a little funny mark over the A, means octopus in Japanese. So they've combined, you know, all these different flavors in the taco form or format. And, I mean, there are just so many tacos everywhere.
We're strained too far away from
the
Viva 32 badass tequila.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, when we finish this, I'm going to have one of those before it's gone. Yes.
Definitely.
Well, listen.
With a little bit of ice.
Yes, I'll put ice in it, even though it's cold, but I will put ice in it. So everything's been going well. When did you start your business?
So we started it a little over 2 years ago. But we launched actual with product in November of last year.
Oh wow!
So yeah, so we're newer. We're the new kid on the block, but it's been great. People are loving the juice, loving the packaging. Another part of our brand that I love to mention that's really important to us is that we are philanthropic. We give back. We give back 10% of net proceeds for animal abuse prevention. We're huge animal lovers over at Viva 32, and we just want to, you know, do something that's where, you know, like our hashtag, it's like look good, I'm sorry, taste good, does good. And so it's just kind of like the motto we live after. Yeah, and it's been great.
So were you in the food or beverage industries before?
No, never. This is my first endeavor in any kind of food and beverage in the distilled spirits world. You know, it's also a little rare to have a woman owner of a tequila brand as well. So I'm hitting all the marks of of the unusual. But I'm having a good time doing it. We're really loving bringing Viva 32 to everyone. We want everyone drinking it.
Well, I thank you for bringing it to us because we really are thrilled with it. And I wish you all the luck in the world. And you're certainly fun to talk to also.
You too. You guys are great. We got to meet one day.
Yeah.
Have some tequila and tacos.
Exactly. And LA's dining scene is so, it's just expanded beyond belief, hasn't it?
Oh, gosh. We have everything here now.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's really, really a mecca for restaurants and great spirits and all that. So, yeah, but, you know, right now we're Viva 32 is launched in New York and California, and then we're going to move into Florida, and Nevada is our next couple of states that we're going to move into. I do want to mention that if anybody wants to buy it, we sell through Wally's.com.
Okay.
So they ship anywhere in the U.S.
Oh, okay. It's W-A-L-L?
Mm-hmm. YS.com.
Okay, good. Well, that's good to know, too. And Yvonne, see you soon, maybe, huh?
That would be great. I'd love to meet you guys. All right, thank you for this. Take care.
Bye-bye.
It's not so long ago that we talked to our next guest about a subject that is dear to his heart. That subject that was dear to his heart then was bourbon. But I think when we talk to him later about the next book that he wrote, just published, his book is about rum, and he appears to love rum too. So you're going to learn a lot about that subject. And if it interests you, then I would suggest you go back into previous programs and compare the bourbon book too. Fred Minnick, I can't believe you wrote two books at the same time, one on bourbon and one on rum. I'm beginning to think that you must be something of an imbiber.
Somebody's got to do it, you know.
Well, you know, this book, Rum Curious, that you just came out with, The Indispensable Tasting Guide to the World's Spirit, I really think that once you wrote this, it is so thorough and so well written that nobody ever needs to write another book about rum.
Oh, thank you.
The other thing is, I never knew how little I knew about rum. I had no idea.
You know, it's actually pretty common. You know, we're talking people in the industry, people who actually work for rum companies, will find that they know very little about rum. And the history of rum, like from a genuine distillation standpoint and beyond, like the legends of the pirates that have kind of pervaded the rum business for such a long time. It's a very misunderstood product, and it kind of really all goes back to the fact that many of those great rum islands were connected to slavery, and they became impoverished, and you didn't really have any way of telling their stories. And by the 1960s, you have conglomerates basically dictating how rum is presented in the United States and elsewhere. And so that's really why you didn't have much of a really good ground of understanding in the American spirits businesses, because there's so much of it is dictated by the larger companies who are in the business of making money versus telling the history of rum.
It's interesting. There's a whole lot of cheating going on.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
I read this book.
This book tells all this cheating. I never suspected.
One of the problems with post your book about rum is that I think people are going to be more suspicious of it than they ever were before.
And a lot of it is like the problem is that a consumer walks into a liquor store, goes to the rum aisle, he or she is going to see three, maybe six brands on the shelf, and it'll be like the different sub-brands of those. So you'll have Captain Morgan, you'll have Bacardi, you'll have Crujon, and you'll have all of their flavor lines and everything. But you won't see anywhere in that aisle or the bottle that, you know, those rums get a lot of government to distill.
And you know, so why is that? You know, you explained it in your book, but it's certainly an incredible idea that our government is up to date, up to this day, underwriting this production, distillation, so that, I mean, these people produce the stuff for nothing. I mean, they don't expense of theirs.
I think it's let's step back and just kind of say what it is. I mean,
you have
St. Croix having subsidized rum distilleries. The Captain Morgan distillery is subsidized to $3 billion. And then you have special cut-over taxes in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Hey, Fred, what's a cut-over?
I never heard of that term.
Familiar with that term.
So that's basically when the islands are able to keep the taxes versus sending it. So they are U.S. territories, right?
Yeah,
got it. Yeah,
and so they're supposed to like share like something that is a federal tax that's supposed to be shared in the pool of, you know, American tax dollars. Well, they're allowed to keep it. Specifically for their island. And every year the president will write a check to the islands, you know, and we're talking upwards of $500 million. So it's an extreme revenue for those particular islands. And they were grandfathered into a certain tax rate. So not only do they get, the money stays on the island, and, you know, potentially leads to corruption and a lot of favors being, you know, given to those particular distilleries, but they're also capped in at a lower rate than a distillery in Kentucky or Pennsylvania or Maryland or wherever in the continental United States. So they have those financial benefits going for them. And I think that would be all well and good if they, you know, created excellent rum, but a lot of times they're creating very highly, you know, multi-distilled rums that have very similar flavor content as vodka, and they will flavor it. They will add sugar to it. So they'll do all sorts of things to kind of give it flavor that has nothing to do with distillation. And what that have, you know, because they have all these financial incentives to, they have all these, basically, they're allowed to produce this rum cost-free.
That's right.
In a lot of ways. And, oh, by the way, a lot of the sugar cane, like in Florida, too, but that's a different story.
Well, so what about beet sugar? You said that some people make it out of beet sugar. That can't be right.
Yeah, so that's a big issue here in the United States. To be rum, it's supposed to come from a byproduct of sugarcane.
Yeah.
So you're looking at sugarcane juice or molasses or sugarcane syrup. And so you have, that's what's on the actual law of the United States. But you have people who are making sorghum rum and sugar beet rum. And sorghum comes from, is like a cousin to sugar cane. So, you know, it kind of has a similar molasses. And so you're not, you know, they have a better argument to be wrong. But sugar beets, obviously, that's a completely different plant life. So,
can we back up and could you just define what rum is?
I think that's a question many ask themselves in the business all the time, because what it is in Guatemala is very different than what it is in Venezuela or England. You know, and that's the cornerstone of the problem of a lot of this. Is like you have all these different styles of rum, and you have people, you have some people who will distill it up to 190 proof, even higher than 190 proof.
Wow.
That's the same, those are the same proof points as ethanol and like vodka.
Oh, shoot.
and then you have people who are distilling it in old traditional Caribbean pot stills and aging it, not adding anything to it, and just bottling it. You know, so you have some people who are adding sugar, and then you have some people who aren't doing anything. And then you have people who are practicing, alleging that they're practicing solera, which is when they take, they kind of stack barrels and they drip down the stocks into the bottom barrel. So sherry, yeah. It's kind of an old sherry technique, mm-hmm. as you know. And so you have all of these different things going on in rum, but you don't have, a lot of, you know, there's not a central definition of rum. There is a central definition of rum. It's basically, it has to come from sugarcane, sugarcane byproduct. And if there was one thing that connected all the rums in the world, that would be it. And, you know, there's a lot of technical things that vary per country, such as, you know, proof points and barrel aging, and additives, but at the core of it, it has to come from a sugarcane byproduct. Now, what's interesting is that rum is often categorized as a Wild West or this unregulated territory. But in fact, that's not true. Barbados has very strict rules. Jamaica has very strict rules. Venezuela has strict rules. You know, the difference here between like rum and whiskey is that if you, your whiskey has very strong organizational fronts that will, kind of protect their categories. Like bourbon has two or three lobby groups in the United States government that will go after anybody who basically tries to make bourbon elsewhere or adds flavoring or adds coloring. So they have a really strong support network that protects bourbon. Scotch has the Scotch Whiskey Association, which has sent probably more cease and desist letters than Microsoft. you have all of these. Ireland has it. Even South Africa and Australia have pretty decent whiskey lobbies. But you don't have that in rum. Rum doesn't have like a kind of a central voice that protects them and defines them. And a lot of it's because within their own group of islands or all over the world, it comes down to they have a different belief system of what rum is. And just to continue to point out that, you know, 1940s to 1960s admin kind of dictated what rum is today. Most people know rum by white or light, gold, and dark. Those are all definitions based on the amount of food coloring that goes into the rum.
That's hard to believe.
No, let's stop for a second here, because we could spend all our time together worrying about the fact that rum is bad. One of the things you do in your book that's really quite amazing.
Oh, rum is, yeah.
Is rum that way.
I don't mean that rum is bad at all. Just
I mean, rum is fantastic. You have rums in your tasting section that are rated 99 out of 100. You have brands like Gosling in Bermuda, which is respected around the world, with rums coming in with product in the 90s. And this is one of the values that you deliver in this book, is that you can guide people to say they won't be disappointed. They'll get their full value out of following your advice and buying the right product and drinking it and smoking a cigar at the same time.
Yeah, I'm big on the cigars with rum. I think rum is great with cigars. Yeah, my style is to point out when there's an unbalanced system, if you will, and stuff that no one in the spirits business really talks about. I kind of like going there, and I feel like consumers have a right to know, and it really kind of does, in a lot of ways, overshadow some of those great spirits you're talking about. One of them, I scored a brand 100. I've never, in my career, I've never scored anything 100. And I've tasted what I believe are four perfect spirits in my life. And, the Foursquare 2006 is one of those perfect spirits. I love everything coming out of there. I love Appleton, 21-year-old.
Yeah, you like that, yeah.
In Jamaica. And that's pretty easy to find. Like, I mean, it's not going to be in every liquor store, but you'll go to a liquor store in New York and be able to find it, or Pennsylvania, Philadelphia or somewhere.
What would it cost?
It's about a $90 bottle.
Okay. So,
the Foursquare 2006 you can't find.
Okay.
But you can find the 2004 and their Criterion release. And that's about $60-$75.
It's a hell of a lot more reasonable than Pappy Van Winkle.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There, you've got great value in rum right now. You have a lot of people who don't know about it, and they're just kind of switching over, and they're tasting these older Appletons and the younger things like Smith and Cross and some of these great Foursquare releases, and they're converted. You know, what's pushed rum for such a long time in a very positive direction is our cocktails, and specifically the tiki movement. It's this great movement that's deeply connected to our country after Prohibition. You got the Mai Tai, the daiquiri, you have all these, painkiller, all these great cocktails. And I love that world, but at the core of who I am a straight spirit sipper. So I love tasting the nuance of a spirit, be it scotch or rum or brandy or bourbon. And I like to see how it feels in my palate and the different flavors in it. And I think rum has it touches so many points on the palate that it's very exciting to me to taste it. Like, I can taste a Jamaican rum, five times in a row, and I feel like I'll always taste something different.
See, I don't have that impression. I really need to start drinking some rum.
You do.
You got to drink the right rum. That's the thing. You got to drink the right rum.
As opposed to the left rum, I guess. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, the rums that kind of meet your flavor profile. So, Anne, I remember you said you don't like sweet.
Right.
So you'd want to stay away from, like, Zacapa, Zaya, pretty much anything from Panama, anything from South America, you'd want to stay away from, because there's a heritage there that they will add, they'll add sweetening. So you would want more of what they would consider pure rum, and that it's basically just aged in the barrel. And those will still be sweet, but they'll be sweet in the style of bourbon. Like, you know, they will,
yeah, right.
That sweetness will come from distillation technique and aging.
You know, to sum up this book, Fred, you do the interesting history. That's one of your strong points for all these spirits that you write about. The history, the uses. Then you do the things to look out for, the uses and abuses. And then you do an actual scoring with tasting notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do recipes for cocktails. I mean, you cover just about all the territory you need in this book.
It's indispensable. I mean, if you're interested in a new adventure in liquor, and rum would be a good one to choose, and the guidebook to get you through there would be, it's called Rum Curious.
Rum Curious.
Well, thank you.
Fred Mead, thank you once again for your contribution to On the Menu. It's always a delight to talk to you. I don't know what you're doing next, but I'm sure you'll be back on the program.
Yeah, you'll be hearing from me in about a year.
Keep plugging and drinking, Fred.
And
actually, you know, since I have you, if it's all right, this airs pretty soon, right? Like you guys air it in the next couple of weeks or so?
Yeah, 3 weeks, probably.
3 weeks. So I'm doing this event with Stevie Nicks and Steve Miller Band and Eddie Vedder called Bourbon and Beyond. It's September 23rd and 24th. I know we were talking about rum here today, but you kind of know me a little bit about my bourbon background, too. And it's this great concert, and it's, you know, basically the bourbon has its own stage, and we've got a lot of distilleries and little speakeasy set up there and great music. So check that out if you get a second. Got it.
Oh, Fred, you're wonderful. Thank you so much. And
thank you all.
Keep it up. We can hardly wait till the next book.
Okay, listeners, don't forget, we look forward to seeing you in Nashville at Music City Food and Wine Festival. And until then, and until next week's program, what do we say, sweetheart?
Bye-bye.